Welcome to the Dojo, the podcast where we turn marketing news into marketing tasks. This week, we're going to hear three stories, as always, including one from our very special guest, Rebecca, from the Exposure Ninja PPC team. And we're going to turn them into tasks that you can do today. Jess, Rebecca, how's it going?
Hi.
Well, like I said, this week we're joined by Rebecca from the PPC team here at Exposure Ninja. Rebecca, we like to dunk all of our guests into the deep end and ask, what is your relationship to marketing?
Oh, gosh. My relationship to marketing. Hello, by the way, everybody. So I kind of fell into marketing. I went to uni and studied law, so completely different from marketing. And my first job was working for a really big brand and working in social media. And then I've had like loads of different digital marketing roles, done some like online marketing as well, which encompass trading and sales. So I've always been very sales driven. So I've done lots of advertising. And then I actually decided to go freelance after being made redundant so many times. So I worked freelance for EN as a copywriter for ads. And then, yep, now I'm PPC manager. So yeah, bit of a transition.
Well, we're very happy that you bounced down. What's those things at the fairground where they hit all the spikes and then you win at the bottom? We're very happy that you bounced down. And ended up with us.
I love that, yeah.
Bounced down.
Gracefully.
Bounced up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Bounced up. I love that.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, yeah, because you win at the bottom, right? The prizes are at the bottom and that.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, so we've each picked out a news headline or a story from the week. Jess, what is your headline this week?
So my headline is vegan brand potentially makes a bit of an AI error via email.
Great. I can't wait for the tidal wave of these that are going to be coming through. This one sounds fantastic. Yeah. Rebecca, what is your headline of the week?
So mine is YouTube trailing pause ads.
Hmm. Interesting. Sounds potentially annoying. I guess we'll dig in. And then my headline this week is, just in case you don't hear enough about AI in search, I've got a couple of AI in search updates for you. One about SGE and one about Meta and some AI search that they're going to be rolling out. I think let's kick us off with a bit of an AI own goal in the vegan world. Jess?
Yes.
What are people doing here?
I think you're completely right, Tim, in that we are going to see more of this. So I got an email from a vegan brand, which had some advice basically about getting enough protein, supporting your gut biome and all these kind of things. And let me just grab it so I can actually read what was said in it. So to start off, it was pretty good. It talked about some like different plant-based foods you can eat. And then in the second section, it talked about protein intake, where it recommends chicken, eggs, beef, tofu, or legumes, and maybe even Greek yogurt, which some of those things are vegan. Many of them, in fact, are not. And as you can imagine, I was like, pardon, what is this? This is a bit random. So I can imagine that other people probably felt the same as well. And I have to say, after seeing that and reading it again, I was like, this has got to be AI generated. It's got that kind of 1, 2, 3 sort of AI vibe. Yeah. And I feel like somebody writing for a vegan brand would not make that mistake, but an AI potentially would. Because even if you said to an AI, this is for a vegan brand and we want to talk about this, 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 and this, sometimes the AI just like forgets. It just decides to write its own weird line in there. Like, you'll be like, don't mention this, and it's almost like it takes that as a challenge. Be like, oh, I will mention it actually. And I think we are going to see a lot of people who are deciding to cut corners, not editing and not checking their work, and these mistakes are going to sneak through. Like, it was just that one paragraph that had the reference to eating non-vegan products in it. The rest were fine. So maybe they skim read it and just ignored that bit and thought, oh, this looks okay. But I'm still really surprised that, like, as vegans, I feel like we're trained to like skim words to see if the word egg or milk or beef or anything is in there. So yeah, it's just a bit of a shocker, really.
So Jess, after this brand triggered your vegan dar, how has your perception of them changed? Does it make you any less likely to buy their products?
Yeah, it just felt a bit lazy. It felt like they don't really care. It felt a bit like if it wasn't AI, it feels like they just don't really embody what they're actually selling. And it really made me go from being like, oh yeah, I signed up to the mailing list because I might want to buy from them in the future and haven't just yet. But now I'm like, ugh, no, thank you. I'll buy from someone else then who feels like they're more aligned with my same values. Mm. So yeah, it's just a bit awkward, really.
It is. And I think on one hand, you could say, oh, this is just a slip up. Like someone didn't check the work before it went out. But on the other hand, when you signed up for that mailing list, I'm guessing you didn't sign up to be, you know, you didn't connect into a ChatGPT pipe where they would just funnel you generic information. You wanted to develop a connection, a relationship with that brand, its personality, its unique take on things. I see this as really sort of, this is damaging for me. This would be like an instant ick.
Yeah, it really had no personality. And it's definitely like, if I wanted a ChatGPT answer, I would have just asked the same questions to ChatGPT. Like maybe it's one of those where it's like, well, you might not know to ask the questions that they cover in the emails, but at the same time, it's just lazy. It's just overall lazy. Just not good vibes at all.
Rebecca, obviously you're very heavily involved in, well, search and social ads, and a lot of these platforms now have generative AI tools to allow you to create ad copy very quickly. What's your take on those, and how have you seen them perform against human created ads, if it's possible to generalize across those two categories?
Yeah, so when I first started with Ian, actually, we did some trial copy against like computer generated copy. I don't even think AI was mentioned back then, and against the ad copy that we wrote, and the click-through rate on the ads was always higher for the human wrote copy, because we'd write for emotion and feeling, and when you're, even though you're selling something, you're wanting to invoke an action or a emotional response from somebody, and the AI, the ChatGPT, or the ones that are installed on the platforms, they don't seem to get that. They don't have the brand voice. They're just generic. It's just like swallowing a thesaurus, isn't it? You read through it and like, oh, that's an unusual word to stick in there, isn't it? Like the day, I'll write that one down. But like, it's just, they stick out like a sore thumb. And especially on Google, like, you will notice that the quality scores are a lot lower for the AI written ads as well. That being said, I do really like using AI to more spark inspiration than write ad copy. And I do think the more we use it, the better it will get. But at this moment in time, I couldn't just like unleash it on ad copy or any other area.
Yeah. It feels like there's a real massive opportunity for these ad platforms to train models specifically on the best performing ads. Of course, they're going to need to tune it for the particular brand's tone of voice and the audience. But part of the problem, it seems to me, is that they're just using generic models, which are just trained on a sort of a mid-level beige of human communication. Whereas actually, if there was a model that had been trained on, you know, the top 1% of all click-through rate ads, you could actually get something which would be kind of interesting. It might, you know, suggest ways that you could improve your own click-through rate or something like that. But at the moment, it's just like a blunt instrument, isn't it? It's just like a baseball bat of...
It's very basic, isn't it? Because even if you think about Grammarly, that's AI, and you can program what style do you want, what tone of voice, is this professional, is this... And that's, although it is a little bit limited, like you can personalize it a little bit more. So I'm surprised the tech's there to do with what you want, that nobody's actually added that function yet.
And what about AI image generation, because obviously product images are a major challenge, particularly for brands that either have a huge range of products or they maybe don't have the budget to get an entire new shoot for each season's products. How have you seen that being used, and is there any sort of convincing use cases out in the wild that we're using on a regular basis?
Yeah, so I do have a client that provides assets to us to use on ads, and they use AI generated images, and we've then re-edited them into video content, and we've used them as like static images on ads, and they've been really good quality, to be honest. I really like the use of the AI images. Like, say, it saves clients who are on a tighter budget, it saves them money that they don't have somebody to pay to come and do a photo shoot, because it can get very expensive. So I do like it in that respect, and I think there are some very good examples. I don't think I've seen any bad ones, to be honest. I don't know if you guys have seen any that are like really shocking.
I haven't seen any that I think are shocking, but I will see ads, and they're often for like SaaS companies or crypto or things like that. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's AI. I'm just not interested. But I think if they're using their own product images and then using AI to like make it a little bit more, to like spice it up, then I think that that's a little bit more sort of ethical and a bit more interesting than just generating any old drivel and being like, well, that looks all right, we'll just use that.
I posted something on LinkedIn which ended up being a little bit controversial. There was one person in particular that took real issue with it, where I said basically that for me, the use of purely AI images in ads, it breaks a little bit of that trust. I always feel like the ad image should represent the product or the service, or there should be something real about it. And it was weird. The comments were essentially like, yes, 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 yes. And then there was one person who is a 3D artist, and they took a really interesting perspective, which I don't entirely disagree with, which is basically, yeah, but do you think that you've been looking at anything real in advertising? Because advertising has always been sort of Photoshop or manipulation. And actually, what's the difference between something that is purely synthetic and something which is taken from an original image, but then doctored so that it's almost, you know, almost detached from the original? I thought that was a really interesting perspective. And it showed that I just assumed that people would look at AI images, just like you'd said, Jess, if it looks like AI, not really interested because it's just sort of fake. But maybe that's not such a clear-cut perspective that people will have.
It's so true. And I'm coming at this from a place where I've encountered a lot of AI imagery, and I'm really hyper-aware of it. And I wonder if there's people who, like everyday consumers, if they just don't care. But I think what you said about that comment that you had that was saying, is anything you've seen in advertising actually real, is really interesting, because it makes me think back to when they did, like, you know, somebody sued Links for the Links effect not happening to them, because all the adverts were showing, you know, if you spray yourself with Links, which is a men's body spray, well, I think it's unisex now, but anyway, I think it's called Axe in America, but the adverts would show you spraying yourself with the body spray, and then a load of women would chase you and be like attracted to you, and this person sued them because he was like, that's not happened to me. And, you know, maybe it is that sort of that, yeah, that same kind of thing again. And maybe we're just, because we're hyper analyzing it, because that's our jobs, maybe that changes our perception. But I still don't like AI artwork, and I'm not big into that, and I'll probably keep that stance forever. But yeah, so that, I just want to say that, because I can imagine that colors my view a little bit.
Rebecca, what's your take?
I have worked with a lot of like 3D product renders before, which is like the person on LinkedIn that says it's always been a bit kind of artificial. So I don't mind it, as long as it doesn't look like obviously fake. I like things, I think, and consumers want things to look real and be a true representative of what they're buying into. The only thing that like puts me off a little bit is the hyper, I don't know if you'll see them like on the fake news articles with like the prince and princess, and like you can clearly see that the people on the news articles are fake. So then that goes back to like the trust element. But as long as it's done with like to be as close and as natural to the product that you're advertising, I don't mind it, and I don't mind working with it as well.
Okay, so convincing fakes good, bad fakes bad.
I think it's more to do with if you're using AI to paint your product in a way that it isn't. For instance, if you're saying, oh, here's, you know, our product is an off-road car, here it is driving through, you know, a huge amount of water, and then it turns out as soon as you drive through a puddle, the car packs up, you're gonna run into problems. But maybe that happened with traditional advertising as well. You know, it's kind of this whole, I've seen so many like scammy products where they show them working fine in the presentation, then you get it home and it doesn't work. So yeah, very interesting. This is, I think we could talk about this forever and go around in circles.
This is really funny. I fell down a Reddit thread the other day, and there were these flowers that I got targeted with, because I'm like quite into my garden, and it's like, buy these cat's eye flowers and they'll bloom and they look like actual cats. And I was like, oh my gosh, are these real? The image was like really obviously bad AI, and I was like, yeah, but are they real? So then I had to go on this whole Google, like, what do these plants actually look like? And there were so many people that had bought them off like Etsy and Temu and things like that. And there were so many bad reviews that like, these don't bloom like this. But yeah, it was so funny to see the reviews. But I could have nearly been one of those people that bought some flowers that bloomed into cats that obviously didn't.
That's amazing.
That's great. I guess with flowers, you've got a bit of a lead time, haven't you, from planting to bloom, where the business can just make hay, sell loads and then disappear. Not like that Charlie Willy Wonka place where as soon as people turn up, it's bad news, it's all over.
Yeah,
it's just incredible.
Right, Rebecca, you've got a story about YouTube trialing some TV pause ads. Really interested to hear what your take is on this. What's the story?
Yeah, so I have recently seen that YouTube have been trialing ads where so when you pause your TV, the ads pop up on the TV, and they're meant to be like a static ad. And this is something apparently that Google's been rolling out. It's not rolled out to everybody yet. It's just something that they've been testing. So I'm just going to read now like what they've said about it. So apparently the trials have yielded positive results. Google's revealed that this could be rolled out more broadly, and that since rolling this out, since testing this, the company's shares have surged, and apparently it's going to pay money back to investors. In their first quarter, they've seen strong traction from the introduction of these ads. And it's in like a non-interruptive format, so like you pause the TV, so when you're watching YouTube on the TV and the ad appears alongside the organic content, and apparently it's been driving strong brand lift results. It was something they discussed last year and they're testing it, but there's been no definitive answer as to whether it's going to be rolled out for us all yet.
I mean, this seems really interesting. I think if I was going to buy that inventory, I'd be really interested in buying like a pre-roll ad. And then if someone pauses the video, then there's like a follow-up, almost like a retargeting for the pre-roll. So it's like the CTA in case. I mean, I obviously don't know if they're connecting the inventory. I mean, Rebecca, what sort of advertisers do you think? Because these are static, just image ads at the moment, right? They're not like silent videos or even videos with audio, because that'd be pretty annoying if you paused your video and then you just started getting a video playing. So obviously they're not going to go, who do you think is going to be buying this inventory?
Well, the information is pretty vague at the moment. It just said that they tried static images alongside the organic content when the TV was paused. I can't imagine that people like just thinking as, sat in my living room and pausing to answer the phone, and then like you say, like a show reel starts playing and the sound, and it's very distracting, isn't it? I think I think it could work for like a lot of people, especially if it's a static image. We have like, I mean, we're targeting all over the YouTube network with static images, the emergence of like PMax campaigns and discovery and things like that mean that we can use static and video content across many of the Google platforms. So I think it was just a matter of time before they upped the game with the TV. But yeah, as a consumer, I'm not sure how I feel about them just, I don't know. I imagine, do you remember the old DVD sign when you pause the DVD and it would like bounce all over the screen? This is just what I'm imagining in my head. I can't like figure out how it, I need to see it. I'd like to see it and I'd like to see the data. I'd be very interested in the brand lift data. Yeah.
Absolutely. Jess, what do you reckon? You up for this?
Yeah, I'm really interested by it because when I kind of saw the initial backlash on Twitter, like X yesterday, I think it was yesterday or this morning, it made it sound like what was going to happen is the same ads that you would get at the beginning, like the pre-roll ads, mid-roll ads, would play. So I was like, well, what's the point in this? Because if you're pausing a video to have a conversation with someone, like we paused a video earlier to have a conversation, like, that would be really, really annoying. But if it's just going to be static images, like we were having this conversation earlier, I kind of envision when you leave Netflix static for a while and it's essentially they're advertising their other shows to you, aren't they? So, but I guess people don't really mind that because they're just like, well, this is a screensaver, so whatever, it's chill, blah, blah, blah. I did see some people say like, you know, YouTube is well known as being like a how-to platform. And so if people are pausing videos to look at how to do something, whether that's art or maybe they're trying to change something on their car and they are sort of, you know, need that static image. Are we suggesting that all those people need to pay for premium or that they all need to be taking screenshots of the stuff they need to see and then looking at it on their mobile? Like, I think, yeah, it's a tough one. And I'm hoping that if people are making how-to content, they have the choice as to whether they can enable these ads, but maybe somebody doing video essays, this would be an ideal choice for them. So I'm just thinking of it from the creator and consumer side, but also I don't think I'd be too bothered. I really like the idea, like you said, Tim, of if you had an advert at the beginning of a video, like if I'm going to have to watch adverts anyway, I don't hate the idea of when I pause it, you know, having a bit more information about that thing that's relevant, maybe a QR code scan to go to their website or something and like a little bit more information. Sometimes I prefer to learn by reading rather than by watching. So in some ways this might appeal to me, but I won't really know my full opinion until it rolls out really.
For a long while, I felt like YouTube needs to get and this might be because there aren't that many video advertisers really compared to the number of text advertisers or image advertisers. But for a long time, I felt like YouTube is one of the most annoying platforms for ads. I actually pay for premium. It's the only platform that I'll ever pay to avoid ads because I consider it my job to consume as many ads as possible, so I know what's going on. But with YouTube ads, just the repetition and the saturation level is so annoying.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've always thought that the opportunity with YouTube would be some sort of mid engagement signal. So yes, I'm interested in more of this. I'm not interested enough to click, but I'm interested in a bit more of this. And then put me in like an ad sequence where you know, it's often webinars, right? Webinar, pre-roll ad. Yeah, I'm sort of interested in that. I don't hate it. Like, tell me more. And then later on, there's some testimonial videos or some like before and afters or whatever. And then you could sort of take someone on a bit of a journey rather than just pummeling them with the same ad over and over and over again until they just relent and buy premium. I feel like this would be an opportunity to do that. So I'm quite excited to see different types of inventory showing up on YouTube. Yeah. I just hope that it just doesn't, for me, like YouTube is just too heavy on ads. Considering most videos also have product promotions in as well. It's just...
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But I guess this is just going to be inventory that PMax adds into its total inventory, right, Rebecca? So we're probably not even going to have that much idea about whether we're actually using it or not.
Yeah, so like when I've been looking at data for YouTube ads, I have seen the odd stats for TV in there anyway. So we're already advertising on TVs in the way that we are on YouTube anyway. I think YouTube could enhance their targeting options a lot better, because what you said, Tim, we have the option to target specific videos and then target it with related content, but maybe the targeting options aren't as clear, or they're not as granular as what they need to be to serve the best content to that user. So there's definitely opportunity to better the ad platform, really.
Yeah. Mm. Imagine if, like, you know, you were working with a YouTuber and, you know, maybe they've got a specific version of your product that they like and they've done their CTAs and stuff. But maybe you could have that pause ad that says, here's some other things we have available, or here's what this creator loves about this product. You know, here's a discount code or something, like an additional discount. Or don't forget, if you use code YouTuber's name 10, you'll get 10% off. Like all these little things that could be quite effective. And that would also catch the people like me that as soon as the ad read starts, I'm like, skip, 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 skip. Like I feel bad sometimes for creators, and I don't always mind, but most of the time I'm like, no, goodbye, I don't want to hear this.
Good stuff. All right. Well, I've got a couple of headlines about AI search. The first of which relates to Meta, which most of us think of as Facebook. So Meta has released their new large language model called Llama 3. That's not what this is all about, though. With the Llama 3 announcement came some other announcements about how Meta is going to build in their new AI chatbots into the Facebook apps, the Meta apps. So Facebook, Instagram, Messenger, and WhatsApp. And they've shown some demos where you can ask Meta anything. So there's a little search box at the top of your app, which you can ask it pretty much whatever you want. You can ask it for recipe stuff. You can ask it who's going to win the football at the weekend. You can ask it who's the best digital marketing agency in the UK. You can ask it all types of things. And the big announcement was that they're going to be integrating Google and Bing answers into this. So this is another, I guess it's a bit like an SGE type thing, where you're going to get a generative AI answer and then it's going to link to Google or Bing. There's no information about how it chooses which one, but I've got some opinions. It links to like a search results page where you can go and then you click through and then you've got a regular Google or Bing search results. So it is kind of interesting. They've also rolled out some other things, like you can you know, in LinkedIn you've got those little AI suggestions underneath each post. So someone's like, oh, you know, I'm so humble that I've just entered myself into the best boss of the year awards. I feel so honored to be shortlisted or whatever. And then underneath you'll have a little bubble that's like, what's the best boss of the year awards or stuff like this. And it's, I don't know, I don't think I've ever felt any desire to click on any of them because they're all pretty generic and not useful. But it looks like Meta's going to be doing more of that. So yeah, I don't know what you two think about the sound of this. It seems like another way to search, even though we're just going straight through to Google or Bing. But personally, I can't really see people using this too much, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it is cool to know that if you were to type into like one of these platforms, best free website marketing review, it would take you to exposureninja.com/review, where you can get a free website and marketing review from the team of ninjas. They'll send you a 15-minute video with some pointers for your website and marketing. It's completely free and there's no obligations either. So if you're eligible, you will get that video. Now I'll give my serious answer, which is I think a lot of people will use this to kind of, just because it's neat and new. Like I think a lot of people aren't going out of their way to potentially try out AI in Google, let's say, because they have to jump through a few hoops. But then I know, you know, there's TikTok trends of people using AI on that platform, and whether they're doing you know, there's this thing where you take a photo of somebody and AI picks a song that's relevant. I don't know if it is AI or if it's randomly generated, but regardless, so I do think that it will introduce AI to the masses, but I don't know how many people, whether it be one of those things where people are like, oh my god, this is so fun, like Snapchat filters for instance, and then they kind of get over it. That's my feelings about it.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know. I feel like Meta or Facebook have tried to diversify quite a few times over the years, and it's never really catched on, has it? I remember when they were trying to mirror LinkedIn with the job sector thing, and I've no idea if that's still a thing. I can say I've never used it, and I don't know whether I can't see this catching on. Maybe it will stop people asking on Facebook for mobile numbers for Chinese restaurants and things like that. Maybe they'll use the search function instead. But other than that, I can't imagine. No, I just can't imagine who would use it.
That's a very interesting point, Rebecca. So I did a little bit of digging, and actually Facebook actually announced this Ask Anything, Ask Meta, in September 2023. So the functionality has been there. And I think a lot of people, myself included, saw this announcement last week and thought, oh, they're building Gen AI into their apps for the first time. But actually, it sounds like it's already been there, but I've not heard it mentioned or used by anyone ever. And you could ask it for recipes now. I think you can ask and it goes through to Google and Bing. But aside from that, but there's other things that Meta has tried to do to build AI into its apps. I don't know if you know about these AI bots, but I've been in a little bit of a rabbit hole with these. In fact, I'm just going to share my screen for those who are watching on YouTube, because this is kind of interesting. So last year, Meta, how do I do this? Add to stage, there we go. So last year, Meta announced these AI bots, and these were basically, they are generative AI bots that you can have conversations with, and you can talk to them in the apps, but you can also talk to them in, they've got Instagram and Facebook profiles, and they're based on lots of the world's, actually the world's most popular influencers. So there's one based on Kylie Jenner, and they're given sort of personas. So Kendall Jenner is designed to be your older sister, which gives you an indication of the, you know, the target audience and demographic for this. You've got Mr. Beast, who is Comedy Zach, who's really funny, apparently. You've got other people like Charlie D'Amelio. You know, these are some of the world's most followed people. And they built them these Instagram and Facebook pages. And this was supposed to be like a new way of communicating on social media, because now you could talk to Mr. Beast and it'd be really hilarious. And you can build up these sort of weird relationships with these AI bots. Anyway, I was like, okay, what? These have been out for now, 7-8 months, and they're posting on their platforms. So I'm on Mr. Beast's one here. Now, considering Mr. Beast is one of the most well-known people for this audience in the world, and one of the most high influence influencers ever, the Instagram profile Comedy Zach has 35,000 followers, which I would say is a total fail. But the other thing that's kind of interesting is the comments. People really aren't digging the stuff that these bots are posting. They're posting just sort of generic AI stuff. Here's one from Kendall Jenner, your sis Billy, on Instagram, who has 188,000 followers, to be fair, but that is nothing compared to the real Kendall Jenner. But the comments are pretty savage, really. Some people are saying, love that you literally have two left feet, because there's a picture of Kendall wearing some boots and they're the same foot. Someone else says, count the fingers. These posts are so cringe. It's like written by a middle-aged marketing manager who once used one social media and it was vice versa. Like, they're absolutely brutal. You're not a real person. You have no musical preference. This photo is AI. Please stop. So I don't know. I think I'm going to call this. I think it's a fail for Meta on the AI bot. It's great to see them experimenting with stuff, but I feel like every time somebody announces one of these things, they're doing it around their earnings report. So they're trying to get some boost in their share price. And then sometimes they get that, sometimes they doesn't. But actually, the underlying features and the engagement, this seems really whack. And it's made me think, I'm not sure this has any mileage from Meta in its current format at all. In which case, these companies are all spending billions and billions of dollars on capital expense on all of these chips to program these AI tools, and it's technology where the use case is still unproven for some of them, which is kind of interesting. I don't know where this is going.
Yeah. I mean, if you're watching my face for the past like 5 minutes, I think I went through every stage of grief because I was like, what is happening? Like I went through the Kendall's, the Billy one. And it's like, if you go on Kendall's Instagram, you know, she might be recommending, oh, I went to this cute coffee shop, or I tried this new food, or, you know, I had this outfit, or I went here. And that's actual physical inspiration that you could copy. Whereas who cares that an AI generated, about an AI generated image of a cafe? Like that to me is really strange. Like, what are you going to comment on that image? Like, I know, I feel like the argument that's coming is, oh, social media, you know, social media influence also curate their feeds and what they're showing isn't real, but it's just really strange to me, like this whole thing. And also it's really interesting that they went down the Mr. Beast route as well, because AI is notoriously awful at making jokes. Like we ask AI all the time to write jokes about stuff and it just makes zero sense. It's worse than when toddlers tell you jokes, when they come up with a nonsense joke, like that's how it feels. So it's really interesting to me that they went down that route. I don't know. It's so strange. It really is strange.
It is strange. Yeah. It feels like, I don't know. I always say it's the PR stunt. It's for everything, because it just doesn't make, like you say, it makes no sense. I wonder if it is a PR stunt. I wonder if they're just getting weird and wacky with their marketing.
Yeah, it's just... yeah, so weird. It's this, it brings me back to this common question that we have all the time, which is like, why is Meta investing money into this when they should be figuring out how we can get AI to like do our washing up or mow our lawn or all these jobs that we don't want to do, but instead they're make pictures and pretend to be people and try to tell jokes. Like it's just, I just don't get it. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't get it.
Yeah, it's like they've missed the memo on social media. Your content, like when you're doing it for a client, it's meant to be inspirational, personal, educational, inspiring. It's none of the, like, it's none of these things. So how can they expect people to connect with it? It doesn't make sense.
I think this whole idea, there's also a sort of parallel thing going on where you actually have AI influencers, don't you? And there are AI influencers who you can pay to promote your product. And these are sort of people, in inverted commas, that people can sort of build a sort of a relationship and a familiarity with. And I've been looking at that, trying to work out, is the reason that we follow people on social media because they are human? Or is it just because they have sort of something that we want? They meet our needs in some other way. And actually, we don't necessarily need the human aspect to be there. This has sort of thrown me a bit, because this is Kendall Jenner. So these are all proven influencers. These are influencers that do have influence, have used that and have proven that to a great extent. You couldn't have picked really three bigger influencers, maybe, you know, Messi, Ronaldo, people like that. But, you know, in the Western world, these are about as big as you can get. And to see the AI versions of them fall so flat makes me wonder if actually influencer marketing is going to be less susceptible to Gen AI than maybe a lot of people believe. Because you couldn't have given this whole project really more resource, more or better resource. And clearly it's dead. Like it's completely dead.
If you want to go down this route, you have to get really creative with it. So a horrible account that I just popped into my brain that I've forgotten until now is this Instagram account called John Pork. I'll pop it in the private chat for you two to have a look at. But for the people listening, essentially, it's like a pig guy. And I think it's AI. It has that kind of AI vibe about it. And like that's kind of funny. And that's kind of interesting to do a brand collab with John Pork, right? Like that's a little bit interesting. You could do something funny. Like if you're a vegan brand, you could do a really funny collab with John Pork. Or you could like, you know, it seems like he has this fashionista vibe. I don't know, very odd, but at least there's like something really interesting here. Whereas the other one feels kind of like the Mr. Beast or the Kendall Jenner ones kind of feel like, what if you could get an absolute bootleg version of these people for a fraction of the price? to promote your thing. Like, that just feels so weird. Mm. Like, at least with this, you're being honest about the fact this isn't a real person. Like, well, blooming hope not. That this isn't a real person. And you can see as well from the comments that Tim's scrolling through, where it'll be like, you're such a gentleman, you're so like suave, like all this. Like, people obviously know this isn't a real person, it's a pig. So their affinity towards it is kinder because they don't feel like they're being scammed. Like, I don't really know how to articulate what I'm trying to say. Like, people know it's a joke, they know it's not real, so they're more like open to it. Whereas I think when it's trying to impersonate a person, people are like, stop that, we have enough people on Instagram trying to be famous, like, let the pig have a moment. I don't know. It's very, very interesting. I think I probably said a lot of nothing there, but I feel like I'm onto something.
Well, if you're, you know, I think you'd maybe follow one or two John Porks. I think if your entire feed was full of John Porks, then Instagram probably doesn't have that much value for you anymore. I would guess. Maybe it's like, you know, it's a bit like I don't know, chili sauce. It's like nice as a little flavor, but you wouldn't want your primary part of your meal to be chili sauce, right? It's nice for bad example. Anyway, I've got a very quick update on Google SGE. So for those who don't know, maybe the first time you've ever listened to this podcast, SGE is Google's generative AI search. And the reason we talk about it a lot is because it could be quite profound and it could have a lot of impact for marketers. Go and just search SGE, Exposure Ninja, if you want a primer on it. Google doesn't really give us any data about how SGE is being rolled out. So we are left to scrape through things like earnings calls, investor calls, to figure out what Google thinks of SGE, how it's rolling it out, and what the data is from users. Google's Q1 earnings call was last week at the time of recording this. So there are some sort of interesting tidbits here. I mean, the overall picture is Google's generally still bullish about SGE, which I think may be a surprise to some of us who've used it and hacked around with it. The language is noticeably softer, though. So we've gone from, Sundar in Q2 last year. So in the summer of last year, was saying, this is good. This is the future of how search is going to be. This is just going to be how search works. Very, very aggressive language. We're testing how to integrate ads in it. We believe, you know, this is going to be a game changer, all this stuff. Now we've got some language like, we're encouraged with how things are going, positive signs. One said, overall, we view this moment as a positive moment in search, which is about as soft as you can get. And there was quite a bit of criticism for him saying not much in a load of words. There are another couple of updates. So we'd started to see Google testing ads above and below SGE. The story last year was that they're trying to build ads into the SGE answers, and we assumed that there would be some sort of clever PMax thing where it was working out where people were at in the buyer journey based on their questions, and it could build SGE ads into that. That kind of seems to have gone, and they're now saying that people like to see ads above and below SGE. So I'm reading that as we still haven't figured out how on earth to build ads into SGE. So it looks like SGE is going to continue to see its gradual rollout. That's quite important. The investors were asking a lot of questions about SGE, and a lot of the analyst questions were about SGE and search. So this is going to be important for Google to show that it's doing something. Yeah, that's it really. It's a bit of a non-update, but SGE is continuing to come. I don't know if either of you have any strong feelings either way on whether that's a good thing or not.
No, I don't know. I've not, like you say, I've not seen much from it, and I've not heard much until the update last week. But yeah, I don't know how that would work from an advertiser's perspective, how you would get, unless it's just like a placement option that you take. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see what they do, if they ever do.
Yeah.
If they ever do. We saw Bing in the early days of testing Bing Chat, Rebecca, where, you know, the little citation links that it gives you when it gives you a sentence, and then it's like, oh, here's the source for that, where you could actually sponsor those. So you could sponsor your page to be the citation source for the Bing Chat response. From a PPC advertiser's perspective, how appealing does that sound to you? Does that sound like the inventory that you think would be high converting or something that you pay a premium for?
I definitely like to test it. I always say test, never say never. But what we're seeing is that really the content is what converts the people rather than the targeting or the placement at the minute. Like we're seeing like PPC see draw parallels from content marketing. So it's, if it's just a link to a source, then I can't see how that would convert. But, you know, a written ad or a really nicely executed video or graphic, that's what's converting at the minute. Mm. And our targeting on both paid social and on Google is getting broader and broader and broader. And it is actually your content that speaks to the targeting audience that is actually converting the traffic. So, yeah, I mean, I'd like to test it, but I don't think it would convert at a high rate. No.
That's interesting. Jess, anything you want to add there? Or?
I guess my thoughts on the whole thing of like, I feel like you mentioned Bing Chat and that's like old news now. Like they just cannonballed into the pool of sharks and just let it happen. It felt like Google dipped their toe into a pool of puppies and then went, oh no, actually we're scared. Like, I don't know. It just feels like, I know they probably, I am also sick of companies just releasing stuff half finished. Like, you know, we're seeing these little AI devices that are becoming, well, I say they're becoming popular, you know, I feel like they're like version one, buy it now. And it's like, okay, but version one is barely a prototype that doesn't work and it's slow and it doesn't do the things you're advertising. So I'm kind of in this weird place between like, oh, okay, the fallout at the start of Bing Chat where it was giving really terrible answers and stuff was not good. It would have been nice to avoid that, but it feels like Google's so far on the other end that they just are too scared to do anything in case their stock plummets. And it's like, just do something. You can't, it feels like they don't want to test anything. They just want to like, they just want it to be perfect. And we want everybody's ads to be in the right place. And really they're never going to have a perfectly right place until the businesses of the world get to play with it. So yeah, that's my thoughts. Yeah. I'm like, just release it for God's sake. Stop going on about it. Get on. Sick of hearing about it, if I'm honest.
Well, you're in the wrong place if you're sick of hearing about it. Great stuff. Okay, what story are we going to choose to draw some lessons from? Jess, what was your story? Your story is about the vegan. Oh, right. We're going to go with Jess's story about the dangers of just getting ChatGPT to write your emails. So Jess, what tasks do you think marketing managers can take, or what lessons can marketing managers take from the vegan brand sending out recommendations about how much meat its audience should be eating?
It's just check. Please just check the work of AI. It's not something that you can just use and let it go to the wild, in my opinion, unless you are selling the most basic, boring thing. And even then, I think you need to be doing stuff to help yourself stand out. And I don't think AI is going to really help you with that. So you really need to be careful. So if you are considering using AI, just review your process and make sure you do have a clear process in place. And understand that when these things do go wrong, you're going to have to apologize to people. And it's not going to make you look very good.
Agreed. I think if you can use generative AI to write your email copy for you, your email strategy probably sucks. Rebecca, if you were going to take a sort of a PPC manager's view on this, are there any lessons that you would take from this? It's very tangential.
Oh, yeah. Just I think kind of have your processes in place, and AI is fine if you're using it for inspiration, and admin purposes, but you can't rely on it, and it can't be, yeah, you can't center your strategy around it at all.
No.
Sound advice. Right, Becca, we now put you through the meat grinder, as it were, the vegan meat grinder, with some quick fire questions. So Becca, if you just had 1 hour to improve your marketing, what do you think you would work on?
Oh, 100% I'd work on tracking. I think tracking is so integral to marketing, and specifically the ads, just to be able to prove ROIs. Like, yeah. And I feel like when you're studying and you're doing courses on marketing and advertising, there's just not enough emphasis on getting the tracking right. So I'd definitely love to spend an hour doing some training on tracking.
I'm just curious, Rebecca, out of all the clients that come into EN, all the businesses that you review for the PPC reviews, which people can request at exposureninja.com/review, what percentage of them do you think have their tracking nailed?
Oh gosh, probably about 5. Like, it's so low. Yeah, we have to intervene in tracking. And I think since GA4 has come about as well, it's very like dev related. So like, there's just a big knowledge gap there from like client side and from marketing side as well. It's just it just doesn't sit with marketing anymore. It's quite a big thing.
Yeah, since GA4, it doesn't really sit with anyone, does it? Okay, next question. What would you do with an infinite marketing budget?
Oh, I think I'd do something quirky, something offline, probably a PR stunt, and then follow it back on like social media, follow like a treasure hunt or something cool like that. Like, just go wild in the public and just do lots of live videos. Yeah.
What marketing skill would you recommend that 18-year-old Rebecca works on, and why?
Oh, so I'd really love to learn more about SEO. That is one of the areas that I've not worked in or not dabbled in. So like, I've been like a digital marketing manager and you like oversee everything before, but SEO is one of the areas that I've not really, like, obviously I know about SEO and I know how it works, but I couldn't like, oh, Rebecca, can you just do this SEO? I'd be like, I don't know where to start. But yeah, I'd love to like learn more about the tactics that are involved with SEO.
What are you most excited about in marketing right now?
Oh, I've got to say AI. As bad as it is, I think there is a lot of learnings to be had. I think there's lots of room for improvement. And just the more you use AI, the better it gets. So yeah, I'm excited to see where we are with it in like, say, 5 years feels like a long time for digital marketing, but yeah, I'd like to see where we are in a few years time with it.
It's worth saying we are so early in the generative AI journey, aren't we? It's really staggering to see the progress that's being made. Finally, who should we invite to be our next podcast guest?
Kyle in the AM team. He's always really good to chat to. And recently I've been working a lot with Flora in email, and she's doing lots of cool things with email. She's on fire. So yeah, Flora would be a good option.
Amazing. We'll get it done. Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. Thanks as always, Jess. And everyone, see you next week.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.